Hello everybody. Animals are in a state of emergency, so why bother wasting time talking about racism, transphobia, or any other form of social injustice? Why indeed, that is what we are talking about in this episode. This is Vegan Talk. I'm Anthony.
Hello, I am Dominic.
And I'm Nazia.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Today in Vegan Talk, we are talking about intersectionality. Now, that might be something that you've never heard of before, or it might be something that you're well versed in. But either way, we hope in the next half hour or so that we can bring some value to you and get your cogs turning in the brain. So to get the ball rolling, I think it's important for us to kind of understand what intersectionality is or what it's not. And perhaps an unintersectional approach would be to think that veganism or animal rights is the only issue, the only social justice issue worth fighting for, and that nothing else matters, that nothing else is related to it. Dominic, do you think it's fair enough to understand where somebody might be coming from if they were to hold that view? Because animals, they're in a horrific state at the moment. Like, billions are being killed and used every day needlessly. It's a horrific state of affairs for animals. It could be understandable for somebody to be thinking like, gosh, this is so, so important. I don't care about anything else. This is all I'm going to focus on.
I think it is understandable. I think that when I was growing up, I grew up in a farming community, very rural, and I was alone in starting to think about animal welfare, seeing how beings were being treated around me where I lived. And it was very, very different from anyone else. So meeting someone who was vegetarian or vegan, it was a revelation to me. So it was always like a big thumbs up if I met someone who was that. I think for me, my life can be divided into two very clear phases. There's the current phase where I'm so privileged, you know, I work as a poet and it's quite a joyful life. I will say that I really, you know, love what I do with my days. But before that, I didn't, you know, I had aspirations of being an artist, but I was working in really long hours, as a lot of people do, in 0-hour contracts. And I think that some people are really tired, really work too hard, and of course, intersectionality is something that would, you know, address many of the inequalities in our world. But I could understand why someone might be like how I used to be, like, oh, I'm really tired. I'm doing a good thing, like thinking about the environment, thinking about animal welfare, and now I want to go to bed. I can understand that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nazia, can I ask, what does intersectionality mean to you? Like, can we put some flesh on the bones of that word?
How can I put it eloquently? I can't. So I think, you know, I do get it, you know, when a lot of people, when they become vegan or they become animal advocates, they are being the voice for the voiceless. But, you know, any form of social injustice has a connection with another form of social injustice. And I guess from a personal point of view, I am a woman and I'm a woman of colour. So that's two factors where I've faced discrimination throughout life. And for someone like me, I can fight for more than one cause at a time. Just because I'm vegan doesn't mean I stop caring about other things that will personally affect me as well. And I think just because it doesn't personally affect you doesn't mean you can't speak up for it at the same time. It's like a lot of vegans, they argue, for example, about feminists. If you're really a feminist, then you would be advocating, for example, the dairy cows. We could say the same thing about vegans. You know, if you're really, I mean, not to create a whole debate about the definition of vegan, but if you're really vegan, you would care about X, Y, and Z.
Well, very few people wake up and think, you know what, I'm a bad person and I love being a bad person. People have all kinds of justifications for why they are. So I am a person of huge privilege. You know, I'm a man, I'm a white man. When I was like a teenager, I became aware of being gay and I was outed at school. And that was a horrible thing to happen for me. And I really had zero empathy for the homophobes in my school. But as time went on, I kind of realized that in their heads, they weren't the villains. You know, I know that this isn't a universal view amongst various religions, but these particular homophobes, often it was a religious thing. You know, they thought they were doing a good thing. They thought, you know, I had people tell me that they were praying for me and that they wanted me to stop my sinful ways. And for them, they would be saying they were coming from a good place, maybe they wouldn't use the word progressive, but from a well-intended place. And it didn't make it any nicer, but you know, I think that's one of the things, really. Sometimes people have, you know, I was horrified. So I moved from the countryside to the city and I never thought I would meet a gay racist. I thought that must be a contradiction in terms. And of course, it is not a contradiction in terms. I moved to the city and I was horrified. Like in my head, like things were very simple as a child. My journey into first vegetarian and veganism was hugely influenced by being gay and kind of making a parallel to like, gosh, you know, isn't it awful when living beings are treated awfully, when there's a injustice, when there's a cruelty? Isn't that awful? But, you know, meeting other gay men who, you know, again, they thought they were saying really ignorant, really racist things. But they believed what they were saying was good things like, oh, you know, I care about jobs. I care about, you know, look after our own, like really ill-informed, really nasty opinions. But they didn't think that they were being nasty. And that's one of the challenges in kind of having discussions, isn't it? When someone has got really, really deep, if it comes from, like, you know, an older generation, like parents who've instilled values in them and they love their parents and they have a lot of respect for their parents, it's like, oh, but that's not a great informed view. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one's trying to steal your job. They're really not. Like, you know, how about, you know, be racist? You know?
it's like when you meet a right-wing vegan, it's like, huh?
Yeah.
And you do get those. I'd like to think a lot of people that become vegan, well, not like to think, because it's you know, if they've come from a personal struggle, whether it's homophobia, racism, sexism, etc., or in extreme cases, if they've come from a war-torn country and they've realized how much violence there is, and they've become vegan because they recognize that violence when it comes to animals as well. So, you know, you'd like to think a lot of vegans have come from that kind of understanding, but then you do get very, very, very privileged, you know, heterosexual, cisgender, white, male or female, because they've not experienced prejudice like other people. But yeah, like they, as you said, they don't think that what they think is wrong.
Yeah. But
and they think just because they're vegan, that's it. You know, I've got the vegan card. I'm all right in life. I'm doing good, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we only have to look to our government to see how the people who are in positions of power want it to be an us and them culture. They're always blaming marginalized groups. So we're nurtured to not be holistic. We're nurtured to not be intersectional. So I mentioned before that my job is a poet, and I'm so lucky I go into schools with really children who are living in poverty, children who you know, aren't, you know, they don't have places to sleep, you know, like white boys who look a lot like the kind of lads that picked on me when I was at school. When I initially got offered this work, I was terrified. I thought, well, they're just going to see me as a big effeminate and they're going to pick on me. But that's not been the case at all. It's really great how these boys, again, they're just children. But sometimes they do have ill-informed views from their parents. And when we're talking intersexuality, if they hear something like white people are privileged, white people are privileged. I'm a white person. I privilege from my whiteness. I do. And you know, that's something that I'm on a journey of learning over. But I understand why, with the government so keen to turn groups against each other, when these children who are so disadvantaged by their poverty, it's really hard to talk to them about racism or veganism or any other injustice, because that, you know, it's immediately from a defensive point of view. It's immediately from, yeah, well, but what about me? What about me? You know, like, I've got it bad as well. And it's really hard to see it as a common struggle, because, to go back to my first point, our leaders don't talk about a common, you know, we're always having, like, you know, refugees being blamed for things, you know, trans people being blamed for things. And that's the country in which, in, you know, that's what the people in power say to us. And it's really difficult to have conversations within that framework.
I think that often discovering your own ignorance is a really painful process, and I don't want to put it on the same level as real horrific things that people go through, you know, in war-torn countries or whatever. It's not on the same level of that, but at the same time, like, we've got to look at it as a big cause for entrenched values and from people not wanting to budge and not wanting to further educate themselves on things. And I think, if you know, Nazi, you were describing then a sort of, you know, white, middle class, cisgender, straight person who's like, yeah, hi, here I am. Like,
sorry, no, I didn't mean to single you out there.
Well, there's quite a few of us, to be fair. But like, even in that position, being vegan, for example, you're opting into a social minority, and vegans aren't oppressed in the same way as other groups, but, you know, being vegan in a non-vegan world is still not straightforward, and it can be tricky. So then to hear further that actually you are unconsciously, because of the way you've been brought up or the culture that you've lived in, you're still unconsciously oppressing people, or your values might be squashing other people's rights or needs, that's really painful to hear, especially if you feel like you've not been doing that intentionally. And I've been called out or I've read things in the past, like read an article that's challenged me. And that initial feeling of kind of being told, actually, mate, what you're doing by using this language or whatever, like, that's causing a lot of pain. That felt really painful. And that took a little while to kind of get over. Thankfully, I'd like to think I have got over it and have then got to the message of it and try to be more intersectional, more inclusive, and rallying for as many social justice causes as there are. But actually, were I not in as comfortable a position as I was reading those articles or being called out on things, perhaps I wouldn't have felt okay enough to challenge myself further, if that makes any sense. And I think, like you're saying, Dominic, sometimes people can be in a position where they feel just vulnerable enough that being challenged by these things is too much for them. So they'd rather put their head in their sand, even if, shock horror, even if they're vegan, like, vegans can still put their heads in the sand about things and say, well, do you know what? I'm vegan. That's good enough. I don't need to educate myself further on this. And that's rubbish. But I think that's probably what happens.
Yeah, I think, you know, when, as vegans, we want to be part of a one big happy community. And what some people might not realize is within that community, you do have gay people, you do have transgender people, non-binary people, people of different races, identities, whatever. So if someone has alienating thoughts or alienating beliefs, then they're isolating, or they're refusing inclusivity to a whole section of that community.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, veganism is, being vegan is part of someone's identity, but there's so many other layers, and you're denying those people those other aspects of their identity. And that's quite an unpleasant feeling, you know.
Well, and strategically, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Like, you're even if you just ignore human compassion for a minute, you've got huge swathes of the population that could potentially be vegan, could be allies, but because of your bigoted views on body size, race, gender, whatever, like you're turning away loads of potential allies. Like it's a ridiculous move.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And I think, okay, you can be vegan and not speak up for other things, whatever, fine. It's not great, but fine. But it's when you, there are sections of the community that actually share quite offensive and hateful content. You know, if we just focus on social media, but there are vegans there that post quite transphobic, Islamophobic, and that's when it's definitely not okay. And that's when it is more harmful to the vegan cause than anything.
I completely agree. There was something, it's by not, by far not the worst thing that I've ever seen, but a staunch animal rights activist that I was Facebook friends with posted a picture. It was several years ago now, and it was on today, like the day of the Grand National, and it had a picture of women dressed up to the nines, and the caption was something along the lines of the Grand National's like the one day of the year that like the wrong animals are shot or something like that. And it was making this hugely like sexist, oh look at these people dressed up, they look like animals, blah blah blah. And it was getting likes and you know, thumbs up and things like that. And you're just like, what the hell? Like that's, I don't know what to do in situations like that. I mean, I don't, like when you were describing that, Nazi, I was thinking like, what do we do when we like come up against these things? Obviously it varies according to the context, but
yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing about social media. It's a lot of like keyboard warriors. People, it's so easy to share a meme or whatever and not think of the repercussions that has or the wider effects that has. And I think that is part of the problem. 'Cause some of the vegans that I've come across that are right-wing, Islamophobic, transphobic, whatever, they're nice as pie to your face. But you know, on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, all it takes is for them to click share, and they you figure out quite quickly what sort of person they are. And you know, as I said, that's just really harmful to the whole concept.
I think that, you know, most of us, all of us, you know, learn as we go through life and develop. And, you know, when I think of like, you know, myself as a little boy eating McDonald's beef burgers, you know, I kind of think, oh, you know, little boy Dominic, there was stuff that he didn't know. So how does that information go from one person to another? I think that one of the problems with social media is often you know so little about the person. If I could not be on social media, I would not be on social media. Overall, I think it's problematic to say the least. For my career, it's kind of something that it would be challenging for me and my job to not be on any social media. I do my best to navigate it skillfully, because you know, you don't know these people, but if you do know the person, I think different approaches work for different people. So my journey into veganism was quite a harsh one. You know, people were quite, you know, and I benefited it from it being harsh. You know, I benefited from seeing really shocking, horrible, nightmare-inducing realities of the treatment of animals. And that was the correct path for me. That worked for me. That wasn't wrong. I've got a friend who, you know, she's got really big anxiety conditions, and she has been vegan for about 10 years now. But like that, you know, I was one of the people who was quite influential. I would have never shown her those videos because it wouldn't have been right for her, because I know her. It would have been like, you know, Stephen King, the horror writer, says that if you give somebody something too horrible, then they just turn off, they stop reading. And all of us have got that balance. So I think that model applies to veganism. And I think it can also apply to talks about transphobia, Islamophobia. You know, it's how you speak to the person. And I think it being a true dialogue to try and understand, because like I said before, I don't think many people wake up and think, I want to be bad. Some people do. Some people absolutely are, you know, I have an ex-boyfriend who, like, his venom, his hatred for minority groups, I mean, it was shocking. It was really, really shocking. So yeah, that's one thing. But there are other people, as I say, who really believe, because of however they've been brought up, whatever religious thing, family things, that they don't think that they're saying a nasty thing. They don't think. So I think that if it could be challenged in a way that's appropriate for that person, and maybe that involves a lot of listening on both sides, perhaps.
I'm wondering, like, Nazia, we've both kind of been party to and involved to differing degrees on kind of issues like this recently within the Vegan Runners Club. I'm wondering to what extent, like, public forums for these discussions can be effective, because they can get a message across to a large group of people. But also sometimes you kind of get the kind of culture wars sort of thing there, where different people take different sides, and then it just becomes us and them. And I wonder whether it kind of then gets diluted, and actually whether just speaking to people individually is more effective.
I think, yeah, speaking to people individually would definitely be more effective. But when you're looking at things like Vegan Runners, so for example, that's, you know, a running club that has thousands of members. And yeah, a majority of those people join the club because they're vegan and they're runners. And, you know, that's what they want to do. They want to advocate for animals. They want to run and, like, showcase that advocacy while they're running. And for anyone that isn't aware, a new running club was recently created called Vegan Running Club. And one of the issues is, there's several issues with this club. On the face of it, people are like, great, another vegan running club, more advocacy, more ways to show people that you can be athletic and ethical and healthy and whatnot. But what a lot of people don't realize is one of the things they try and promote is inclusivity. However, a couple of the founding members have been outspoken transphobics. Like, if you know them personally, you would know that they are transphobic. There's been issues around women's safety with regards to another member, and just other very, very questionable views. So anyone who's none the wiser, they would join this club thinking, you know, great, this is a running club for me, without realizing, you know, that they're not as inclusive as they make out. I think it's vegan washing, because they're trying to hammer this message for the animals. And it's like, yeah, you can be for the animals, but you can also be supporting other social justice movements as well, which is what the original Vegan Runners Club does.
Or not squashing them. Like, there's a difference, isn't there, between, like, actively promoting something and being inclusive of something and not squashing something. Like, Dominic, we've spoken in the past about PETA and the way in which, like, their pro-vegan tactics will be really misogynistic, really sexist, like, really, maybe not directly body shaming, but certainly kind of promoting a certain shaped human being as being optimal. It's like, it's, you just need to not be a dick, really, don't you? Like, it's, there's a difference between not being a dick and being, like, really pro every social justice cause.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that I am really passionate about my martial arts club that I'm a member of and have been for, like, a couple of decades. And when I got my black belt, I had the opportunity to set up my own club. I received those qualifications and I spoke to Manchester's LGBT Foundation about doing that. And as a cisgender man, I wondered whether there'd be much diversity in ethnicity. I wondered whether there'd be many women, many bisexual people, many trans people. And I'm really proud. I'm so proud of our club. And we've got a really, really diverse mix of folks. Probably about half of the people happen to be trans or non-binary, which definitely I didn't think was a given when you're like, oh, look at this, like, white bloke hosting this group. So I'm really glad that that's been an inclusive space. Then I thought, but, you know, my wider group of how I'm part, a lot of people have never really met someone who is trans knowingly. They've never had conversations about trans before. And I thought, is there going to be a conflict with the people who've been in my little group then going to the wider group. And it's been really successful, really compassionate. And there have been people who have had views changed from listening and from conversation and from the conversation being appropriate to the individuals. So my group is my LGBT foundation group has existed for about 5-6 years now, and I'm really, you know, it was a concern for me. It was a concern because I want everyone to be safe. I want everyone to be able to you know, be supported and for that dialogue to happen. So yeah, I think the martial arts can be vilified a lot. People say, it's just people kicking each other's heads in. But I think that it is a really good example of, you know, compassion is at the heart of it. And certainly something that we talk about again is like, you know, sometimes if somebody's trying to attack you on the street, maybe you don't use a gentle, compassionate tone. Maybe you're a bit harsher if you're faced with like a threat to your safety with physical violence. So again, it's about judging the appropriate way to engage with someone if they say something that is a horrible thing. So, because I keep returning to this point that, yeah, there's my ex-boyfriend who just fueled by rage. I think, you know, most of us, our body is like mostly water. I think his body was mostly rage, you know, but I think he's unusual. I think most people, they say things from a place of believing they're good. So if they feel that they're being attacked, I think most people, you know, it has to be a respectful conversation in most cases, I would say.
Can I ask you both, like, in your advocacy for social justice issues other than animal rights, can you point to any work or efforts that you've gone through there that have ended up coming full circle and actually making you a better advocate for animals? Because in my head, it always does good to kind of flex your muscles in more than one setting. If you just do the same thing in the same way all the time, there's going to be a limit. Whereas if you're kind of mixing it up and you're talking about different social injustices in different settings, different scenarios, like, that's surely going to actually ultimately benefit your vegan advocacy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I can't remember his name, and I wouldn't be able to pronounce it if I knew his name, but I think he's a Japanese vegan activist. And when he described veganism, he said it so eloquently, and I'm going to butcher it, but he just said it's all about recognizing suffering. You know, you don't have to care about them. You don't have to like them. You don't have to relate to them. But it's all about recognizing suffering. So, I mean, obviously a hot topic at the moment is what's happening in Palestine right now, for example. Mm. When you look beyond the genocide that's happening against the humans, you realize how many animals are also suffering. You look at the climate impact of using all these bombs and weapons of mass destruction, the climate issues, which again has an impact on the environment and animals. But, you know, it's not just the domestic animals of Palestine, but it's also the native animals of Palestine that are also suffering. So, you know, it's when you look at other forms of social injustices, you realize it's really difficult not to connect it back to, you know, as I said earlier, you can't be a true feminist without advocating for dairy cows, for example. You can't be a true environmentalist without advocating for animals, for example. And I think, you know, that can be said for almost all kinds of social injustice. And yeah, so I do feel like having awareness of other social injustices only heightens, I don't know if heightens the right word, but only makes me more aware of how to be a better vegan. Mm. I'd like to think so. I'm not perfect, but I'm trying.
We're on a journey, aren't we? So when I started the Taekwondo Club, the LGBT Foundation wanted me to attend some trans awareness training. And I did think, well, I've got trans friends. What do I need to do that for? And I was a bit like, you know, time is precious. Do I really want to commit this time? And I'm so glad I did it. It was done very skillfully. They listened to me, they spoke to me, that the communication was respectful. And I don't feel there was any fingers pointed, but in my own internal digestion of what was covered, I thought, gosh, I'm not as aware and not as skillful when it comes to how I've been with folks who are trans as I thought I was. And that was sobering. And I'm sure I'll have similar experiences in the future. I think that, you know, we're all on a journey. Like you said about yourself, Nazia, you said, I'm not perfect and I'm not perfect. And it's about being open to that thing. But it's about breaking the cycle of abuse, isn't it? Because people are working 0-hour contracts because the government have you know, stretched the gap between rich and poor. And people have got bosses who treat them like really, really, you know, worthless junk. And then you go to them and you go, oh, have you thought about the animals in Gaza? And they're like, screw the animals in Gaza. Who cares about me? My boss is horrible to me. No one cares about me. I've got more things to worry about that. And they don't see it as connected. Whereas, you know, very, very much, I believe that you know, a weird comparison to make, comparing the boss being horrible to employer to the homophobic teenagers bullying me. But, you know, I have a very different view of them now than I did then. I kind of, you know, I kind of thought, oh, I'm being bullied, you know, I've got no time for anything else. And then I kind of, as I said before, sort of thought, well, actually, I feel a bit of connection. I'm seeing how the animals in the farms are and, you know, like suffering is suffering. And that was a bit of a leap for me to see it not as an attack on me, like, oh, your suffering is not as worthy as this suffering. And I think that's for many people the obstacle when it's seen as a comparison or even competition, like who's suffering the most.
That's a really sound point. I've heard people use the phrase like, no one's free till everyone's free, or something like that, which doesn't perfectly encapsulate what you've said there, Dominic. But like, it's like, we don't, yeah, it doesn't have to be the case that we only help the people who are suffering, quote, the worst first, and kind of do it in that order. Like, we all need to kind of lift ourselves out of that, don't we?
There's a wonderful video game, independent video game, came out recently called Gibbon. And in this video game, it's made like by a very small team of folks, and you play as a gibbon swinging through the trees. It's really, really fun and joyful. And then it's full of facts about the palm oil industry and the destruction of rainforest, the displacement of indigenous people, social media, baby gibbons being used in selfies, how entire families can be killed for you know, one baby, how much land is burned to make palm tree plantations. And you know, I've added palm oil to something that I look out for in ingredients. That's a really recent thing. And again, I look at Dominic a year ago, who was vaguely aware of palm oil. I do enough. And now I don't think I do enough. And there'll be another palm oil thing on my journey. I'm not perfect, you know. I think the communication that this game did, they did, it's not the only way to do message, but they did it in a really entertaining, really joyful way. It's really cool being a gibbon swinging through the trees. It's a really fun game. And I feel that they give the message in a way that I think it'd be quite difficult to feel like attacked, you know, that is quite dispassionate, the way the statistics are given. I think, in my opinion, it's done very, very skillfully. And it's a recent example of someone challenging me. And I think that's what we've all got to do. And you know, maybe that's the thing in chatting to people who are on their journey of discovering certain things. It's not an absolute, isn't it? It's not an absolute. I have reached the state of enlightenment. I have nothing more to learn. You know, I don't cause any suffering. You know, like, we're all on a journey, and being open-minded to that that dialogue.
Like a true professional, Dominic, you've preempted where I was going to try and take the conversation then to round things up. We've talked about a lot of things, a lot of frustrations, obstacles, root causes and things like that. And I dare say we could go on for hours and it would be a valuable conversation. But in terms of rounding things off and giving listeners like some takeaways in terms of how to best promote an intersectional view of the world and of social justice issues, like what would we say could be some pointers or some good little tidbits to take forward?
I think going back to Dominic's point that everyone will react to things differently. Everyone's, you know, the same approach isn't going to work for everyone. And us as a vegan, you know, the majority of us used to eat animal products, and we all came to the journey or came to make the change for different reasons in different ways. So I guess when it comes to other, you know, intersectionality and other forms of social justice movements, it's kind of like the same approach, I guess. Like different people are going to respond differently. Some people might never come round to it. Others, it will take time. So, you know, the best we can do is probably just be patient and just keep sharing those messages. And, you know, the difference is, okay, animals don't have a voice that we can understand, but with humans, we can express our suffering. And it's just giving a chance for the people that aren't listening to actually listen. And hopefully they just come around to it. I don't know. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I really agree, Nazia. I think you've put that, you know, yeah, definitely. I'd like to believe that the people who made the Gibbon video game are really intersectional folks. And I'd like to believe that there's not a homophobic person on the team. But, you know, we were chatting before about some people have problematic views for understandable reasons. Maybe they've grown up in a certain religion or have certain parents. And this person who, as in the main person, let's say there was one main person who was like, oh, palm oil, we want to get the message out. They could be like really homophobic. I hope they're not. They could be. That doesn't mean that their message about palm oil is invalid. It'd be quite the opposite. You know, I it's hard to argue against the message of palm oil. So whatever faults they have, that's something really good. If they were homophobic, I would like to believe it would be kind of a dialogue that we could have together, where it could be like, oh, I've really listened to what you've said about palm oil. It's really hard to argue against that. But, you know, here's my experiences as a gay man. And I understand there's things about faith. But when you look about how people suffer and people's life experience, you know, basic human need. And, you know, I'd like to believe that the mutual listening could be. And I think, you know, if all of us have an understanding that we're all on a journey, that we're not there, that hopefully will disarm the defensiveness. Oh, don't attack me. Don't attack me. If it's like, well, we're all on a journey. You know, I'm on a journey. We're, you know, we've got things that we can learn from each other.
Absolutely. I've got two little things that I'd like to finish with. One is very superficial, and it kind of links to something I said earlier, that just from a strategic point of view, like if as a movement, we don't seem to have an issue with alienating people of certain body sizes or from social racial backgrounds or certain sexual orientations, like we're being a really complacent, arrogant movement. Like, as far as I'm concerned, we need everybody that we possibly can. So making our movement as inclusive and as non-bigoted as possible, like, seems to be the only sensible strategic move. And that was my first feeling when I've had people say things to me, like, in person. I was stood at a vegan festival representing vegan runners, actually, and somebody having a big go saying, like, I don't understand why there are vegans who are overweight, like that's such bad representation for the animals. And like, stood next to me was a vegan runner of a larger body size, and just like, what the hell do you think you're talking about? Like, you're just completely to this person's face just upsetting them. Like, come on, have some tact, have some sensitivity, even if your unfortunate upbringing has led you to have this bigoted belief. Like, keep it to yourself. But my second thing is to, as much as possible with time constraints and what have you, is to look into what the root cause of oppression is, because actually so often, as we do learn, it's to do with power and people trying to seize power and wield it over others. And Julie, who is a very regular host on the show, talks about veganism as being an evolution and actually us evolving from a certain state of being to sort of being on a higher plane, if you like. And actually, maybe as lesser evolved animals, we might have needed to wield power in a more sort of barbaric, brutal way. But actually, if we're evolving now to kind of be more enlightened beings, then we don't need to oppress people with power, and we can hold power and we can share it between us without squashing each other. And I think kind of the more research people can do into that, the more they'll realize that these social justice issues are all connected, and we can elevate each other instead of squashing.
Nazia was speaking about animals being voiceless, which is so true. And I know when I was really in the middle of homophobic bullying as a teenager, I wasn't a calm person to talk about homophobic bullying. I would be like really angry, or I would just be really quiet, just completely internalize it and not be able to talk. And I think a lot of people, you know, we're at different stages with our emotional ability to handle suffering. So I think to compare that to the situation you just described, Anthony, of like the person going, oh, how can a vegan be overweight and all? I don't know anything about the person with the large body, but it's possible that maybe they might have been really upset by that, and they might not have felt that able to confront it because of being upset by that, which makes it all the more important to be intersectional, to kind of think, well, you know, suffering is suffering, and to be like, if I am able to talk out, you know, suffering is all of our concerns. If we want to be an evolutionary being, if we want to be the kindest person, the best person we could be, then absolutely, yeah, we want to speak on behalf of suffering at any point we can. Absolutely, yes.
Sound wise words. Does anyone want anything else to say before we round things off? I really want to thank you both for contributing thus far, because it's a hard, passionate subject to talk about and think about, isn't it?
No, I think Dominic's said the points very eloquently. So hopefully I've managed as well, to be honest.
You definitely have, Nazia.
Oh, thank you, Nazia. I was thinking the exact opposite. I was thinking, oh, Nazia is so composed, and the whole reason I'm a poet is I spent absolutely ages writing my words, because when I talk off the cuff like I'm doing now, just, you know, off the top of my head, I'm like, bah! And like you said, Anthony, I'm thinking, I bet I've used all the wrong words, and Nazia was so composed, and so, you know, so thank you for saying that, because that's very much what I thought about you.
Oh, thank you.
It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know whether I've kind of desensitized myself to kind of like speaking about veganism like publicly like this, but I think to start with, I would be very like, oh gosh, like I need to choose my words really carefully, because this is a really important topic. Whereas like now 57 episodes in, it's kind of like, no, okay, I you can calm down a bit, just let it flow. Whereas like today, because we're talking about intersectionality, it's like, oh my god, now we're holding even more, there's even more issues that we're needing to say the right words about. It's
and that they are very sensitive topics, aren't they?
Of course they are.
Yeah, it's hard not to talk about it with a lot of emotion, just like you would talk about veganism, you know, with a lot of emotion.
Yeah, it's good when stuff matters though, isn't it? I think.
Yes, I think so. And when you actually care about it.
Yes, exactly. Right, let's bring things to an end. Everybody listening, goodness, we'd love to hear what you have to think. We've been receiving your emails, and we will continue to read them with glee. And it can't be long until we're doing another listener mailbag episode. So do send your messages in, not on the socials at the moment. I'm making a conscious effort to just ignore social media for a bit. So enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com is the way to get hold of us.
So thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode. And don't forget to check out the back catalogue and other shows that we have.
Make sure you look out for the episode coming out on Monday, when Paul and Anthony will be looking at the week's news in veganism.
Absolutely. Well, we've got time for two things just to finish off the show. First of all, Nazia needs to give a shout out for her podcast, which is very excellent, and we all need to hear about it now.
So yes, I co-host a true crime podcast called Felonious. We're fairly new, But we would love for listeners to give it a chance, just to give a bit of information about the podcast. Obviously, it's true crime, but we're trying to mainly focus on cases that have happened outside of the UK and the US. So we've had about 13 episodes so far. Yeah, check us out. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook. The podcast is on all of the platforms, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, etc. Give us a listen and let us know what you think.
It is very excellent. I can vouch for it. And every criminal featured is an intersectional vegan, which is great, you know, because it's... that might not be true.
Yeah. The hosts are vegan. There you go.
There we go. Easy peasy. Easy peasy. Cool. Well, the final thing we need to do is we need to hear a fantastic spoken poem from Dominic, but we'll round off the show in the normal way first. So I will say that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I have been Anthony.
I have been Dominic.
And I've been Nazia. And you've been listening to Vegan Talk from Enough of the Falafel.
This is a poem by me, Dominic Berry. You can find me on Instagram at the poet Dominic. This poem is called Peace of Vegan Cake. Zen of cocoa, marzipan mantra, sticky bowl of vanilla quiescence. Cakes are forgiving. Wooden spoon jerks soul, stirring self-raising spirit, smooth as newfound breath. To be forgiving, cream, gritty sugar, dissolve and flow. A consistent mixture. Leave no crumbs or mess anymore.